This is The Hollywood Outsider, a weekly movie and TV podcast, which can be found at thehollywoodoutsider.com. This is our special episode where we are going to do a little roundtable on The Dark Tower, the adaptation of Stephen King's magnum opus, his masterwork, if you will, about Roland Deschaine and the Man in Black and their eternal struggle for control of the Dark Tower. Be sure to get the hoe on the go with our Apple or Android apps. You can also find us on Apple Podcasts, where reviews are appreciated, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or your podcast app of choice. And please, if you enjoy this, share the show on your social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Reddit, whatever it is. We do appreciate it. Every little bit helps. And you can always support the podcast at patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider, where some tiers will get you a bonus episode of the show. My name is Aaron Peterson, and just for people that are new to this podcast, throughout the summer, we do a couple of these. We've done, I think, three or four this year, where we do a roundtable. And that's a very casual, laid-back. We don't each have our own microphone like we normally do it. It's very much, let's go out as a group, see a movie, and then we'll go back to wherever we can and discuss the movie in a very open setting. Now, that means that you don't have the perfect audio you always have because people are just in a room. So it's not perfect, but it is, I think, more engaging because you get immediate reactions. You get natural reactions to what you just saw. Maybe there's hype, maybe there's not. I was really surprised that we all felt the way that we felt about this movie, because the way Rotten Tomatoes and some other people were leading me to believe, this was not going to be as enjoyable as I found it. So what I would say before we get into this is approach the movie with an open mind. Cast your expectations to the wind and try to enjoy it. And I should let you know before we start, we also have a little bonus for you. Dustin Baker is joining us for this roundtable. He was actually at the New York premiere with Idris and Matthew McConaughey, so he'll talk a little bit about that story and how that happened. It's pretty cool. We've got a lot of perspective, and he's actually seen the movie twice now. So he's not coming down off a high. This is what he genuinely feels. He's seen the movie twice. Without further ado, let's get into our reactions cast on Stephen King's The Dark Tower.
For thousands of generations, the gunslingers were knights, sworn to protect us from the coming of the dark.
Sees visions, as you call them.
What do you see?
I see a tower,
the Man in Black,
and the gunslinger.
They're just dreams. They're not real, Jake.
There's another world out there.
I know there is.
Who are you?
You're a gunslinger, right?
There are no gunslingers. Not anymore.
Why does the Man in Black want to destroy the tower?
The tower protects both our worlds. If it falls, hell will be unleashed.
He's like the devil, isn't he?
No,
he's worse.
Death always wins.
You let that tower fall, billions of people die.
Do they have guns and bullets in the world?
You're gonna like Earth a lot.
All right, let's go.
This is The Hollywood Outsider, a weekly movie and TV podcast. We're doing a little special episode right now as we're talking about The Dark Tower. This is one of our roundtable episodes, which means it's very casual, very laid back, and we're going to be talking very spoilery about The Dark Tower. Now, I should let everybody know, we have a big difference of opinions, not necessarily in terms of the movie, but in terms of our history with this series. So we're going to approach this a little different. We're going to first talk about what the casual viewers thought on the movie, and then we're going to get into these crazy fans who just can't stop talking about it. But first, let's introduce everybody. My name is Aaron Peterson, and joining me today is my fellow host, Scotty Clark.
Hey, what's up? I love doing the spoiler cast when I've actually seen the movie.
It helps. Yeah, it helps. Also joining us, Troy Heinrich from The Blacklist Exposed.
Glad to be back with everybody. How are you doing?
Well, we're all doing pretty well, unlike most of the critics, apparently.
Exactly.
And joining us is a special guest who was actually at the premiere, which we'll talk about at the end of the episode. He was actually at the New York premiere of The Dark Tower.
Otherwise, we'll never get through the rest of the episode.
That's true, because it'll be the entire episode. Mr. Dustin Baker.
Hey, how you guys doing today? I was actually probably part of the Hollywood Outsider cast, maybe episode 3 or 4 in the old days.
That was a long time ago. Six years ago now.
Audio quality hasn't gone up much since then.
No, if you listened, yeah. The audio was pretty bad.
But the artwork still looks awesome.
Yes, he did. Mr. Baker designed the logo, so if you all like that logo, yeah.
All the artwork.
Almost all the artwork.
Hey, you hear that, Rob? I did all the artwork.
Oh man, well we're doing this. You know, we've done a couple of these roundtables because you know, I realized that we could just have a studio set up and do that, but this feels more casual. It feels more fun for us, and I think we have a good time doing it. So, and this is the last one we're doing for the summer. So I hope you guys enjoy this one. It's a big one. It's gone through a lot of ups and downs, but The Dark Tower follows Roland. What's his last name? Does he have a last name?
Roland Deschain of Gilead, of the line of Eld.
Okay, so he has a last name. That's good to know.
And this is Jon Snow.
So, again, Scott and I are casual. We have not actually read the books. Dustin and Troy have read, I think, all of them. How many times? Troy, how many times have you read them?
Twice.
I have...
Well, I read and listened twice.
Does that mean four times?
No, I kind of hybrided it because I had to read like underneath the covers when I could get whenever I could get in because I really wanted to read it, you know, at work and stuff. Sometimes.
Wait, were you reading under the covers at work?
Exactly. What, a blanket.
Do you work at a brothel? No. I don't understand what's going on. All right.
No, at lunchtime, just reading at lunch and then listening on the drive to and from the house.
All right. And Dustin, how many times?
I read it the first time, then I listened to it the second time, and then I read it one more time after Stephen King rewrote the first book.
Risen? Is that like a Ruby Roo?
That's a Hollywood Outsider term, sir.
That's something I got from Scott.
Yeah.
No, you did not get it from me. You got it from him. I do not want letters.
I just didn't know if you were trying to make Duddits work in the Dark Tower or something. Right.
All right, so...
And I haven't read it at all.
Back to what this thing is about. Yeah, I haven't read it. I tried to read the first book. I did not like it. I got about... You know, sue me, whatever. I got 100 pages in. I tried three times because my good buddy Rob's like, read this book. It's a great book. He was lying to me. I did not enjoy it. It turns out everybody else that has read it loves it. I'm the exception.
Not necessarily true. The first half of the first book before you get to where... Roland meets this young boy, Jake, who we see in the movie. That first half of the book is boring as hell. It is really, really hard to get through.
Really, really hard.
It's dry.
It's dry. And then you get to the Jake part.
Like the planet or whatever.
Yeah, like the desert. And then the Jake part is where the story really picks up. So I'm glad that they started with the Jake part for the movie, personally.
Yeah, we'll get there. But for this movie, we're going to talk about the movie first. Then we'll get into how it differs from the books and what the book readers think. And then we'll talk a little bit about Rotten Tomatoes and what those people think. Not that we care, but
those people.
Yeah, those people.
You said it so indignantly, like those
I'm just,
people.
I'm just. We'll get there.
There's a few ripe ones out there.
Yeah. dad jokes are kicking in early.
That's
my
job, dude. What are you doing? I'm supposed to be the dad joke king.
Anyway, so Roland Deschain is basically he's in Midworld, and Jake Chambers, right?
Mm-hmm.
He is basically the young man who finds out that he is a psychic of sorts, that he has the power to bring down the tower. Now, the Dark Tower is the thing that keeps the bad things away, is really the quick and easy way to say it. It is the barrier for mythical forces, right?
Correct.
For monsters and all the things we should be afraid of.
And I get the impression that the tower is kind of like the thing that connects all of the worlds together as well. It's kind of like the connecting glue in the middle.
Correct.
Right. And not only on top of that, it's actually what connects all of Stephen King's books.
Oh, we'll get there. We'll get to the book part.
I understand.
Hold on. Okay, we got it. It's the king glue.
To put it simply, it is like a top. And if you were to spin a top on that point, that point needs to stay spinning constantly.
So it's connected to Inception.
Yep,
it is. Okay, that's good to know.
That's a thimble, though, but okay. It's not a top.
It was a top.
It was a thimble.
It was a top. Wasn't it a top?
No, it's the thimble. It's secret.
I don't remember a thimble at all.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was a top.
Listen.
That's top spin, thimbles kind of
sit
there.
Hey, let's talk about Dark
finger.
Tower, guys.
Well, we can't even trust him to know what a thimble is, so, I mean, you're going to trust him with a thimble.
There are other worlds in these. Maybe they call them thimbles
in that world.
Sound
like Mike Tyson saying
thimble. Thimble. All right, so here's... So basically, we have the man in black. We come to find out his name, Walter. Did you know that?
Walter O'Dim is his name in the movie.
In the movie. Is that his name in the book?
In one of the books, it is.
Okay. Yeah. So, and that, these are played by Idris Elba and Matthew McConaughey.
All right.
And it's basically a fight... Don't do that. Everybody's doing that. Don't do that. So let's talk about the movie itself. It becomes a battle versus good versus evil because children can bring this tower down. It turns out that Jake is unlike the other kids. He is the most powerful of
He can
bring it down just by himself.
By himself.
Instead of like the multiple kids that they were trying.
Yeah, and he's been trying to bring it down. Walter's been trying to bring us down for a long time.
He is this world's version of Anakin Skywalker. He is Metachlorian heavy.
Oh, you just went there, didn't you?
I did.
So does that mean that he...
I'm trying to make it simplified for... Yeah.
Eventually we'll go
dark. He wanted to simplify it with midichlorians. Is that really what you just tried to do?
Scott, what did you think of the movie? As a casual fan, I know nothing about the story. What did you think about the movie?
As a guy who's never read the books, I just have a passing knowledge of it, just that there's a tower and there's a guy trying to get to it named Roland. That's literally all I knew going into this. I didn't know what to expect, and I was shocked by how much I enjoyed this movie. And it was... I thought it was paced very well. I thought that everything moved along at a really good clip. I felt like the ending maybe came a little bit too quick because it just ended so fast. But it's one of those movies that I'm watching where I'm viewing this and going, I want to read the book because I want to learn this world better and all that. So I thought Matthew McConaughey was awesome. I just love how icy cold he was with his deliveries, when he would just say a one word like sleep or hate or whatever. It just the way that he delivered that was very cool. Calm and collected. I love that in a villain. I thought Idris Elba was great. He just had this humanity to him. And like when he was hurt and I don't know. He just was very, very likable and someone that I could relate to. And because even though I was supposed to relate with Jake. By the way, what was the actor that played Jake?
Tom Taylor.
Tom Taylor. I've not seen him in anything. Is he in anything that we should know?
He's in The Dark Tower.
He played, and I looked up his Wikipedia earlier. He played in a few movies earlier, but it's I don't think it's...
So this is going to be his breakout
performance? This is his breakout.
Okay. Yeah. I thought he was great. I really didn't... I rarely watch a kid do a performance in a movie and feel like and not feel like he's acting. I didn't feel like he was acting. I felt like he was acting the way that a kid would. But you had some issues there.
Well, you get there when you wait your turn.
Just wait, Troy. Just wait till we get up to bat. Just let them talk.
Let us novices get a chance.
I did have some minor gripes with it, but not enough that it ruined the enjoyment for me. Do you want to get into those now or
no? We'll get in. I just want like a quick overview. Yeah. Of what you thought?
I really liked it. If I were to give this a if $10 were the full price of admission, I'd give it $7.
Okay.
I really liked it.
Pretty high.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I was a little disappointed when it's called Dark Tower. I kind of thought Idris Elba was getting into the entertainment industry, adult entertainment industry.
Oh Jesus!
But that said, I ended up, and I didn't know what the movie was about.
God.
I enjoyed the movie a lot. I had walked into it, and all I knew was Rotten Tomatoes hated it. Now, I don't base anything on an aggregate score, but I mean, it is an indicator sometimes that it might just be the best okay movie of the year. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, well, it's just gonna, maybe it's just gonna be okay. We'll see. I really enjoyed it. I thought it really, the pacing was quick. I understood the mythology. I did not think it was complicated at all. I felt like they, as someone who doesn't understand what's going on when I walked in, I felt like I knew enough to know that there is a huge world involved here, but I didn't have to sit through it and try to decipher what the hell is going on. I actually understood everything that was going on by the end of the movie.
Well, what's interesting is easily. I was having this discussion with Dustin on the way over here because at the beginning of the movie, I was frustrated because I didn't know what was going on, but they explained everything by the end of it. By the time we got halfway through the movie, something that they referenced at the beginning that we were completely clueless, those of us that hadn't read the books, they explained it. They explained what Shine was. They explained what this dream was. They explained just these tiny little things. So I felt like I got a good sense of the world by the time the movie was over, and I really appreciated that.
Yeah, I felt like, it wasn't a sprawling epic. It wasn't that kind of movie. It was very much a movie that's setting up the world and getting you ready for what's to come, should anything more come of it. And I think it worked great for that. And my God, people were harping about it being 95 minutes. I loved that I had a summer movie that I enjoyed that wasn't 2.5 hours long.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't full of things I didn't understand. And now I'm going to have to go look it up and Google everything. I actually understood this more than I understood Dunkirk. So, yeah, I liked it. If $10 full price permission, I'd give it $6.50.
You give everything 650.
I give it 7 then. How about that? Just because piss on the people that keep telling me I should hate it. I really enjoyed it. I walked out going, I want another movie.
So and you just gave 50 cents out of spite.
Yep. It's a 50 cent spite. Basically because Troy's giving me grief. And I actually felt it like the whole time I'm sitting there going, man, I've given like 2 or 3 movies in a row, like 650. I'm going to lose my audience. So I'll jack it up. 50 cents.
I'm glad you didn't say credibility.
No, I don't have any of that. No. And I'm still really bummed. I really thought it was going to be the adult entertainment kind of film. And if that was Jeez. You guys, it would be a really good time. But
it is a King property. He's, you know.
He's naughty. You ever read it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He likes some freaky stuff.
That's man. A different kind of naughty.
It's a special kind of naughty.
Ooh.
All right. Now we go to the people that have actually.
It's not adult entertainment.
Now, here's the thing. The word is really all around. I mean, it's all over the place for people that have actually read the book. Some people love it, some people hate it, and some people are in the middle. So it's pretty even keel. So where do you guys stand? Oh, Dustin, we'll go to you last because you got to see it before us. So piss on you. You can wait. Troy.
So my understanding of the movie was that I was not going to get the 7-book epic Lord of the Rings type thing that we always wanted. Mm-hmm. That we wanted 10 years ago. That's the first thing. The second thing was that EW went ahead and spoiled the fact that this isn't going to be the books. It's going to be what comes after the books, which we can't tell you unless we spoil the ending of the books, which we don't want to do because Scott's going to actually read them. but it's a continuation story.
Listen to that.
Yeah, it's a continuation story of what we've already read. So as a book reader, what I was hoping for was to at least get some nods and throwbacks to the actual book properties, but have it be a completely new, fresh story where I want to go back on these journeys and explorations with Roland. And that's exactly what I got. I got a brand new story that had a lot of cool throwbacks and a lot of great Easter eggs. I had a hell of a fun time with the movie. Every time there was something on the screen where it was like, oh, did you see that? Oh, did you see? We're like literally pointing at the screen and clapping as the movie was going along. And yet the movie itself felt fresh. It felt new. It felt like it wasn't a remake or a rehash or a second or third or fourth in a sequel. It felt like it's a brand new property that can extend for the next, you know, 6 to 8 years if they wanted to, depending on how they draw this thing out, to tell the full proper tale.
You were clapping at the end of it.
I was clapping at the end of it. I was really scared because at first I'm like, they're never going to be able to do this ever. 10 years ago. J.J. Abrams, never going to be able to do it. Ron Howard, 6 years ago, never going to be able to do it. New guy who I've never heard of before, never going to be able to do it. And they pulled it off. And I was actually really, really impressed with what we got out of this.
All right. Now, Dustin.
Oh, if full price of admission, I would give it a solid $8.
Nice.
And you're very critical.
I am.
Of everything.
I'm
especially.
Yeah, I am actually excited to go see it again on Sunday.
Wow.
Nice.
In the Dolby Atmos Theater to get the full sound. Because that'll be cool.
Okay, I don't know why any of that meant, but Dustin.
It's hard to know where to begin. I had to internalize it, and I will get into it later in the podcast. I did get to see this at the red carpet premiere.
The black carpet premiere.
The black carpet premiere. It was not a red carpet, it was black.
That's kinda cool.
And the experience I had in the theater was beyond anything I've experienced before, because everybody that was sitting in there was directly involved with the movie. So everything that happened...
Except you.
Except I was just sitting there. And by the end of the movie, the part of me goes, I would have given this a 19 out of $10 just because of my experience. It was unlike anything I've ever experienced.
That's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money.
Yeah. That's Canadian, right?
But there was a part of me that was... You know, that had been wishing this movie had... I've been wishing for a movie like this based off the Gunslinger book for over 20 years. I mean, I read the first book when I was 13 years old. And seeing this, there was a part of me going, I waited 20 years for this? And I wanted to give it a $3. There was a selfish part of me that wanted to just... wanted the complexity and the heart and the soul that King put into this onto the screen. And the selfish part of me just didn't like that. But I needed to throw myself somewhere in the middle. So knowing that they picked Idris Elba in this was absolutely perfect. I know that when King first wrote this book and when he finished it, everybody kind of had this thought that it was going to be someone like a Clint Eastwood type of,
it was written
Western.
That way, like a spaghetti Western, right?
It was written like a spaghetti Western. And in fact, near the end, it was almost described as a Clint Eastwood, but it actually looked kind of like a younger Stephen King. Stephen King almost threw himself as a part of himself into Roland. And when Idris was cast, people kind of threw up this whole hissy fit. Why would you cast someone like Idris into a something like this, which...
You can say it, an African-American.
Yeah.
Or actually, British-American.
Well, he's black. And here's the thing is, Idris says he's not black. African, and he's not American. He's black. Black.
Yeah.
So they cast a black Roland, and everybody mm-hmm. went, WTF, man. Because when you think about it, there is real reasons why in the book...
Blue eyes.
Yes.
Blue eyes, the spaghetti
pale,
Western.
Pale finishes, face.
But there is specific story elements for one particular character who we do not meet in this movie that character is so pivotal to the story. And the way she talks and the era she comes from, she's African-American from the 50s and 60s. So that character with a black woman talking to a white cowboy from another world, that dynamic makes the book, makes the story. So when you cast a black Roland, you immediately go, well, then who's going to play Susanna?
Yeah.
And is she going to be white in order to get that dynamic back again?
Mm-hmm. So,
or is it going to be something else?
So back to the Idris, everybody threw up the big hissy fit. And then Stephen King shut everybody up. When he tweeted, he said, I don't care what color skin he is, as long as he draws his gun fast and he takes care of his quartet. And everybody shut up.
Yep.
And then when I saw...
It's kind of hard to argue with the guy who wrote it.
Yes. Yes. And then when...
That's a pretty open and ended debate very quickly.
But when you watch this, here's the thing is, Stephen King needed to write a character that was basically the epitome of focus and concentration. He needed to write a main character that was just all about one single focused direction. And he wrote Roland. And in this movie, Idris played... He was a little bit directionless. He did not know where to go and what was going on, and Jake kind of focused him. But Idris Elba ended up playing Roland perfect, to the T. There was nobody else now at this point in time that I could have pictured it. The third time I read it was when I heard about Idris Elba, and I picked up the books, and I read the whole thing again, picturing Idris in there, and it worked. And I thought to myself, I can't wait to see this film because Idris is exactly who we need as Roland of Gilead.
Until Odetta called him a honky mofo.
Yeah, well, let's, we'll talk about that later. So, Matthew McConaughey, Man in Black, Walter, was a suave talker. We needed someone that knew exactly who to talk to, how to say it, and everybody would have just bowed down to his words. And Matthew McConaughey played him perfectly. Now, I had a little bit of an issue. My gripe was Tom Taylor. Not to say Tom Taylor wasn't an amazing actor. I think he was perfect as
I think he was good. I wouldn't say he's perfect.
I think his dialogue, the written dialogue he was given, wasn't fair. And I'm not going to fault any of the screenwriters for that, but...
Well, if they wrote it,
Troy,
we can.
It's their fault.
But Troy and I had read, understanding that Jake is a very young 11-year-old boy, 10-year-old boy, and the reason why we got captivated in the story is because it's a lot about the relationship of Roland bringing Jake with him into this world and becoming his father figure. And they created this bond of someone who was so naive and someone who was an expert at everything becoming one. And
because of the time it takes for them to travel, they grow up. Like, he grows up throughout the course of the books. So now we have Tom Taylor, who's playing this kid, who's more like 14 in the movie. And we're going to have a Walt situation from Lost, where he's going to age out of the role unless they like take a portal to get to the Dark Tower overnight.
It's going
to
turn into Carl, where when the trilogy comes, we're going to have a young Jake Chambers with a goatee down to his chest. And his voice
is going to... Hey, Roland, you're going to need to get me through that portal, yeah?
So that was my only gripe. I'm not saying that's what ruined the movie for me. But that was kind of like, to me, that was a little bit of the weak point. Outside of that, I really enjoyed the fact that this was watered down for the rest of the viewing audience. I think Troy and I probably would have done somersaults around the theater seeing exactly what we saw in the books. But then, you know, Aaron and Scott would have been like, okay, I don't get any of this. I might as well just get out of here. So this watered down version, I think, was a good adaptation. So if I would say that if $10 were the full price of admission, I would give it $7. And that's just because I'm trying to gauge my energies of what I experienced before and what I'm wishing it would be and what I got. $7 is good. If I watch it a third time or fourth time, it might even go up.
Because you've seen it twice now, right?
I saw it twice. And actually the second time I enjoyed it much more because there are so many Easter eggs in here. There's so many things. And the second time I watched it, there were more things that I caught, and I really caught myself. God, I really enjoyed watching this. And I thought about it. I've been constantly thinking about it the entire week. And so, you know, I told Aaron, I said, I gave it 7, but it might go up. It might go up. So
I just realized why fans of the book don't like it. I just realized it.
Oh, I'm interested.
Because it had a satisfying ending.
What do you mean?
Every Stephen King book doesn't have a great ending. This actually has an ending where you're like...
This has an ending. So like, screw that. It's not a Stephen King book.
I have to get comfortable. I'm going to throw a devil's advocate in for the people that read the books. Because I know my mom read the books. This isn't her favorite of King, but King is her favorite author. So I've read most of King's work. I just couldn't get to this particular thing. I think
so. By you not reading this book, then you have forgotten the face of your mother.
Boo!
Oh. Well, thankfully, she won't listen to this podcast. So piss on Troy. Here's what I think. Playing devil's advocate, I think a lot of book readers wanted that sprawling story that everybody's talking about. Right. Now, I think we've all talked about this. We all agree it would be a great TV series, and I know it's going phenomenal. To be. And we're not talking about that right now. We're only talking about the movie. But I think for a lot of people, they've waited for 20 years for the story to come to the big screen. And much like, you know, Lord of the Rings and other sprawling epics, they have adapted the actual source material. So I think many people, really just wanted that source material. Now, I think it's a matter of expectations versus my opinion. I'm not gonna, look, if you didn't like it, you didn't like it. That's totally up to you. I'm just saying there's 4 people in this room. We all have varying opinions. And we didn't have those expectations. We had different expectations. Mm-hmm. And we seemed to all enjoy it to different levels.
Well, we had constant readers actually in the theater with us that, mm-hmm. as the credits were rolling, stood up and started talking to Dustin and I. And even though they were like...
Scott and I just ate popcorn and hung out. I hope these guys stop talking soon because the credits were over and they were still talking.
Yeah.
Which is good because if people are talking about it, that means there's buzz for the movie, number one. But number two, they're talking about things like, I wish this would have, or I wish that, but I like the movie. You know, mm-hmm. I think it does come down to literally if you came in expecting something to happen, you're going to be probably disappointed. If you came in with I just want to go on a journey with Roland again, because Roland's a badass, I think you'll completely enjoy it.
What did those people say? I mean, because honestly, I tuned them out because I didn't know what the hell they were talking
about. They're talking about there's.
But did they enjoy it? They didn't seem to enjoy it as much.
The group
as
ahead
you guys
of you
did.
Didn't seem like they liked it very much.
Well, it was
I
funny.
I think they got there.
It was funny. When they first...
Would you beat them into submission?
Kind of. Dustin did.
No. When they first started talking, they're like, I don't know if I liked it. And then Troy and I were like, well, here's why. And then we talked to them
here's
a little bit about...
Here's what you're wrong, guys.
Yeah. And then... magically they go yeah you're right.
Did you have that horn thing with you?
The horn of Eld. So it was an amazing experience. I had thought that every reader knew that when this movie was about to come out, and even after the trailer came out, people got excited. But I guarantee you 100% of all the Dark Tower fans said the same thing. I'm going to be nervous about this movie. I'm nervous that it's going to get screwed up.
I believe it was a prayer or something like, please don't suck, please don't,
please don't suck,
suck,
please don't suck. So when
because it went through development hell and everything.
Right. Yeah. And yeah, it's,
you can read that up. Go Google it. There's tons of stories about it.
So as I sat and watched the movie and the first few scenes started to play out, I'm going, oh no, this is not, I just, please, this is not going to happen. And later on, I was pleasantly pleased. They didn't screw it up. It wasn't what we all wanted, but it was good enough for it to get some life.
To reintroduce us to these characters.
Yes.
That's what I wanted. I didn't want your sprawling epic because I didn't understand it. And I think, I'll be honest.
And now you want the sprawling epic.
I was actually, I didn't want to see it simply because I didn't want to have to deal with all this mythology that you guys wouldn't shut up about. That now I have to try to figure out from this two-hour movie. Instead, I think they really got it down to the bare bones. And I completely understand what's going on. I don't think it's complicated. I think they set it up perfect to where if they continue, they do another movie, that they can go further into it. They can elaborate on it. They can build on it. They set a foundation. I don't think they were trying to throw everything from even the first book out there. I think they were just like, here's the world. How can we set this world up for people that don't know anything about it? And also not put a slight, because I mean, it's like a catch-22 for them. If they adapt the first book, they have to do the entire mythology. If they do it a different way, they can set it up however they see fit and make it a lot smoother and easier. And also give fans more of what they want, but get the casual viewer involved before they erupt into all this crap you guys have been talking about for years.
Well, just to make kind of a comparison, because like you think of like...
Make a McConaughey comparison?
No. Another McCarrison? Series that's been adapted from a book, Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. That wasn't done when they started doing that. Dark Tower was done. They adapted, apparently, from what I hear from the book readers of Game of Thrones, they adapted the first book pretty much spot on, and then they kind of diverged after that, right? They didn't have the luxury of doing that because they didn't know where the story was going to end. You know what I mean? Dark Tower, they know where it's going to end, but they don't know if it's going to take off. Because, yes, they'll get the book readers if they do that adaptation of the first book, but if it is like you're saying it is, that first half is a little dull, you're not going to get as many people as you are as if you tell it this way.
To contradict you, though,
okay,
the question would be is, do they really know how it ends? Because the book technically has two endings.
Well, no, because I don't think it really matters because they started after those books, right?
Right, right.
Now, I guess this is where I want to just kind of go into spoiler territory, and we'll go casual versus book readers here. So one question I do have is if it happens after those books, and you said Jake Chambers is in those books, how does that work? Is it like another Jake Chambers, or?
I know a little too much already.
Well, I need to, I mean, seriously, I don't
okay,
care.
Okay, so
this is spoilers. If you don't like it, turn it off.
Well, this is the question of, do we want to ruin this for the two of you?
Because I'm not going to read it. I already tried.
No. But I want to respect Scott's wishes because I want Scott to experience what Troy and I went through. But
He already knows.
But right? I will say that Jake Chambers, one of his famous quotes, and it's not spoiler because it's all over the internet.
Yeah, I mean, it's on the poster.
It's on the poster. Is there are other, you know, go now. There are other worlds than these.
So is it Jake Chambers from a different world?
The soap opera. I'm just kidding.
It gets complicated because
again, a different world is not a soap opera.
Oh, no, it's another world.
That's another world.
Another world.
Another world.
Man, get your Cosby stuff right.
Because what happens is instead of it, to Jake Chambers to get to Midworld, he didn't go through a portal. He died. And he showed up in Midworld. And then he dies again in Midworld. And he shows up in New York
again. So he's always a linchpin of this whole thing. No matter what.
That's why Jake Chambers is special for that reason.
Yes.
Okay. See? That's all you got to say. Yep.
And, you know,
I love how you guys are all nervous, like you just ruined it for somebody.
No.
Look, if you haven't read it by now, it's been out for 20 years.
The Jake Chambers death, though, is a critical moment for Roland in his battle with the Man in Black.
Because the Man in Black says...
He just shot the Man in Black.
No,
so.
The Man in
Black...
No,
he did. I saw it.
Yeah,
in his
yeah,
head.
Yeah. It's the spoiler, guys. So the Man in Black gets shot in the end. So
good beats evil.
Yes.
I couldn't see that coming ever.
But the Man in Black puts an amazing test where he has to choose whether or not he gets to catch the Man in Black or he gets to save Jake's life. And Roland decides, I'm going to catch the Man in Black.
That's a bold choice.
And he tested it and he goes, you passed my test. And so, and then that's when the second book happens. And that's when the story really picks up. But, you know, going into book.
That's not movie.
That's
territory.
Not movie.
Yeah, that's not movie territory.
So the thing I did like about
it establishes Roland's character, which is something that the movie was really trying to struggle with, I think, and why the reshoots ended up happening was because.
Well, you think. You don't know that.
No, we know that the reshoots were specifically to establish the
hatred,
the purpose of why Roland had to chase the Man in Black. Like that,
because originally it was like 5 minutes of exposition, and they wanted to make that scene
stand out more.
Yeah, okay.
Right. So everything that you see with Dennis Hesburgh's character, who plays Stephen Deschain, Roland's father, everything you see there is
Allstate.
The purpose.
No, David Palmer,
President Palmer,
yeah,
Serrano.
That's not the Allstate guy.
Yeah, he is.
The
Allstate guy.
He
is David President.
But if you don't refer to him as President Palmer, Joe Boo is going to come mess you up. I'm just telling you now.
It's important. That's important.
But yeah, the fact that that was in there was to establish
President
the fact
Palmer
that,
got shot again.
I know.
God, it's just like, I can't stop.
After
reliving it.
After he was magically choked to death.
So speaking of magic, the one thing that I liked. Segue. No, yeah, this is what I liked, what they did in the movie, is that in the Dark Tower book series, there is a big contrast between magic and technology. And back in the old days, magic was in control of everything, and it started to die off. And you saw in there, there's a little NCP, North Central Positronics. They are the technology company that started early and became a big deal. And now they are pretty much taking control of anything that used to be magic is now technology. Mm-hmm. And so technology is now a major part in this movie, but it's so old. And they did that in the books too. All the technology is there, but it's dying. And magic is dead, and the technology is dying, and the world's moving on. And we see this in the movie. The technology is old, and people sometimes don't even know how it works.
Mm-hmm. But I understood that, too. Like, I felt like they did a really... For me, I think they did a really good job of breaking this down so that it was easy to understand. I totally got what happened. Mm-hmm. I mean, it wasn't that hard to follow.
And that makes me happy. When I watched the movie the first time, I'm going, this is going to be great, but gosh, I think it's going to be more important for me to understand what everybody else is going to think of it. So, you know, sitting here listening to you guys makes me feel hopeful that of the franchise.
If you sit closer, I'll make you feel something else.
Yeah. Well, Idris Elba was interviewed and he said, you know, he's got family in Marvel. He's got family in Disney. But this is a franchise that he is so glad to be a part of because it is something new, mm-hmm. and it's an original story that no one's done before. And he is hoping, and he's being honored to be part of this new story. And I'm wishing upon wishes that this becomes a franchise.
Well, now, it might not do like box office records in the opening weekend, but I think there could be enough.
It doesn't need to, but it needs to get $75 to $100 million.
Yeah, it needs to make its budget back to get the TV series and the rest of the franchise made.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as it does exactly what you guys are saying, now, Aaron, we can't take with a grain of salt, right? Because he is a critic at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
But if Scott's really excited about it, and now he wants to go read the book.
What does that mean? My opinion still matters.
It matters, but you're a little more...
Movie snob, right?
Oh, he just basically said, I'm not a critic.
Yeah, it just basically says you have no credibility, my friend.
No credibility.
Ha ha!
Jeez.
But if they enjoy it...
Nobody can see you flipping them off. It's
audio. That was just
now
for him.
Now they can.
Yes, radio magic.
But the fact that they actually enjoyed the movie and are... Like, I want to go back to this world and I want to continue on these journeys gives life breathing into the franchise, yeah. Which is exactly what we want to have happen.
Let's go. Let's tell us what you didn't like. We've talked about we like this, we like that. What didn't you like? Scott, what didn't you like?
There's a couple things. The first thing, there were a couple scenes that I felt were shot a little too dark. The scene in the playground area,
mm-hmm.
when Jay gets attacked.
Excuse me, it's a theme park.
Was it still a theme park at that point? I thought it was like...
he was referencing
the movie. Go ahead.
No. But I felt like it was like climbing on a jungle gym or something. Was it still the theme park area?
Yeah,
it was like a roller coaster. I'm thinking.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he's getting attacked by, you'll probably tell me what the name of the creature is that he was being attacked by.
A spirit creature.
A spirit creature. It was really hard to see. It was very dark.
Is that
almost
the official title?
No.
Okay.
It's just a thing.
It's just there's different demons. We won't get into it.
It was hard to see. It almost felt like it was borderline black and white film at some point because it was so dark.
Yeah, it was very gray tone.
Like
very
a mist almost.
Jesus. Boop boop.
That was the only scene where I felt like it was dark. Because I had going into this, a lot of people said that it was dark throughout, and I didn't feel that way at all.
No,
there were some action shots that I felt were a little shaky cam, but just slightly, not enough to really ruin the experience for me. And then two other quick things. One has to do with a shot, and one has to do with the story continuity. The scene where, and we're in spoiler territory.
We've been there for 20 minutes.
When Jake's mom is killed.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys noticed this, but
when did she burn?
The camera was focused just on the mom, and it was like the top half of Matthew McConaughey's face was cut off.
Oh, yeah.
So you were just seeing his mouth and his nose, and I did not understand the reason for that, because you wanted to see his expression during that scene as well, too. I just wanted the camera just to be just up a little bit. Tiny little thing did not ruin the experience, but it just bugged me. Last thing I'm going to say
that's a weird reference, man.
I'd call it out too, because if he's talking and he's the one talking in the shot, then the camera should be focused on him.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing I thought about was like, man, that man's skin is smooth.
McConaughey?
Yeah, just because the way that it literally cut him off at the nose, and all you saw was his mouth and his chin. While you're looking at her expression on her face, because he's that much taller than she is.
Shame.
And it's like, you could just pull the camera back out a little bit so you could frame both of them up properly. But yeah, it looked like his mouth was moving and the rest of his face didn't move.
Really liked the moment, though. I thought it was a great moment.
I did too, but I was distracted by not being able to see this top half of his face.
You're like, I really need to see all McConaughey.
Yeah, I mean, not because it's McConaughey.
He wanted to see the bottom half.
Okay, so he can't do it, but you can.
I did it different. I said, am I right? Am I right?
Yeah, but it wasn't funny.
They disagree.
There are other rules in these.
There are laughters.
That might be how he does it in that world.
Last thing is a story issue, and it has to do actually with the same scene. Or not the same scene, the scene shortly after. When we know that Jake's mom is dead, and Matthew McConaughey, the man in black, is talking to his cronies and saying, well, that's a little surprise for him when he gets back to his home. If he knew that Jake was going to go there, why did he leave the whole place unguarded? Why not have somebody there? If he's trying so hard to capture Jake, why not leave one or two cronies, at least in the neighborhood?
Well, because Roland would have picked up on it easy.
Roland can sense?
Yeah.
Roland, okay, in the books, I hate always referencing the books.
Yeah, because we're going by the movie here, yeah. So if it didn't happen in the
movie. But you guys got this, they did touch upon this a little bit, and hopefully they'll do it more. Roland's senses are beyond the normal person.
He's Spider-Man.
He can see amazing, he can hear amazing.
Yeah, see Spider-Man.
He's Spider Slinger. Yeah.
So, and they kind of played on that, and this is this.
They say he has a web shooter.
They did that in the trailer. So yeah, I'm sure the man in black knows Roland well enough that, you know, well, I'll just have cronies in there. Well, Roland will just clean him up easily. So we're gonna do something to have Jake go completely nuts, which was gonna make his shine like a beacon. And they're going to, you know, track him from there.
No, I get that. It didn't bother me at all, but I get what Scott's saying.
I'm not trying to defend it. Scott's got a good point.
I mean, the only thing we got about his heightened senses is the scene where he rescues Jake by shooting, like, through the buildings and through the laundry.
Yeah, I agree. We didn't get much about that. So what you're talking about, I don't think that really came from.
Before they go to New York and find his mom.
Yeah, but it doesn't really paint a picture. No, it paints a picture in terms of how he shoots. It didn't really do that with, you know, his heightened senses for awareness.
And it also was
people.
Something that he had to, like, summon almost. Or he conjured up this thing by calming down and listening. Yeah. You're not going to walk into a building and be like, shh. Hey,
I mean, every time you walk into a building, guys, I'm in New York, but you really need to be quiet.
But he does that same exact thing right at the end when he's in the Dixie Pig. And he's about to, like, throw the shit down on everybody. He, like, literally takes that breath and pauses and thinks about what his first move's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And he can figure out where everybody is.
But he didn't do that in that scene, is what I mean, he didn't do that.
Not there, no.
Right, but I'm saying Dustin Chisholm has a defense, and I'm like, he could have done that.
I'm done defending.
But he didn't do that.
I'm done defending. I mean,
he could have just rolled in, he could have barrel rolled in, he could have thrown out both guns, and he could have shot Jake in the face, but he didn't do that. So if he didn't do it, it doesn't count.
Okay, so let's...
Scott, I kind of want him to shoot Jake in the face.
Scott, do you have any other gripes?
That's it. I love the rest of it.
Okay.
You or me?
Me, because I don't know how long you'll go.
Not as long as Dustin.
Yeah, no, Dustin will go longer. My biggest gripe is probably the ending. I think the shootout and everything was great, but I do think it felt really rushed.
Like, undeserved, almost. Like,
I mean, I'm of two minds. I really like that the ending just came. You know, I feel like too often in a movie, you know exactly when that final act is hitting. You know exactly that this is going to... All right, well, this is the final showdown between the boss. And I actually thought there's probably going to be a good 15 minutes beyond what there was. So I kind of appreciate it because I didn't expect it. But the same token, like after the Man in Black is defeated, I felt like that would have been a great opportunity to do a little bit more setup for, you know, the world as a whole. And I felt like they kind of just, we got to hurry up and get to the credits, guys. I mean, we're out of cash or something. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how I felt that last 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
That's really my biggest gripe. I do think McConaughey was good. He got really close a couple times to chewing dialogue a little too hard, but he never went over the line for me. And Idris Elba was fantastic, so I have no complaints about him whatsoever. And actually, about Tom Taylor either. I thought he did fine, but I think his role was underwritten.
Yeah, I'll have, I think it's three, maybe four. The first one would be, like, the movie opens up pretty well. I'm excited how they do the transition between Jake and Roland and kind of the dream sequence back and forth. But when Jake goes to bed the second time and then falls asleep, and then there's a longer immersion into the mid-world portion,
mm-hmm.
it kind of drug on a little bit and got a little mythology heavy. So I was a little bit more nervous for the general audience at that point.
I didn't have a problem with it. I was into it.
Yeah. Like the first one, I was good. It was like short, sweet, get it in and out. The second one, I felt like...
Stop assuming we're stupid. What did you not like?
Well, the second one just felt like it went on a little bit too long, and that it was a little bit more... It drug it out, so that slowed the story down a little bit,
okay.
I felt. The other thing was, right as that was happening, they threw away the best line in the entire movie. Just threw it away. Oh,
the gunslinger...
Yep, the man in black fled across the desert, and the gunslinger followed. It was just a whisper, and it was just... Like, it just a fart in the wind. And I was like, really? That kind of made me angry.
I thought that was cool, man.
It was cool, but from a constant reader, and it's like the...
Well, put it this way.
It is the start of the book, and it's like the
I understand that, but there's... The only other way you could do that is if you just said it when the movie opened.
Right.
And why... I mean, I guess you could do that.
But then if you do that, he has to be in the desert. So you couldn't get to the desert until you got introduced to who Roland was.
I think you actually could have done the whisper, like, all black, and then just fade in and start it where it started.
Just to let you guys know...
That's for the remake podcast that we're going to do in a few weeks.
This script has been rewritten 4 or 5 times since 2007.
Mm-hmm.
And every time it's been dropped and has to rewritten from scratch again. So this, you know, Nicolas Arcel... and Goldsman wrote this version, and I think they did a good job. I'm sure they did a version where it started out as the man in black sprinting across the desert, and then the screen pans across and you see Roland kind of strolling along, and you know, it's the epitome of what the book starts out with. But you know, this way is good. I'm other grapes.
The other two I have is Tom Taylor, great actor, good actor. Maybe the lines for him weren't written all that well. He acted down to the age appropriately, I think. But because of his current age, it didn't. I could see through it, and it kind of ruined it a little bit. Like, he wasn't as innocent as the book would make him out to be. So knowing how old he was, trying to act innocent and maybe a little bit slow or stupid in some regard, even though he's super brilliant at the same time. I think that just kind of threw away a lot of the ability of what Jake was, like the naivety of what Jake is, like in the woods and stuff. Like, it just didn't play off very well. It seemed like he's older, so therefore he should be a little bit more smart about this stuff.
Okay.
And then the last thing was the orbs. I thought the orbs were cool, but in the books, you only see two of those orbs. You don't see all 13 of them. There's 13 orbs
in total. The ones that the Man in Black uses.
The one, when, yeah. And he uses...
To watch things.
He uses the blue orb, which we've never even seen in the books.
Do different colors reflect different things?
Yeah. Yes.
That's why I got that impression, but I didn't
it was
get
cool.
the explanation.
Yeah, because I think it explained it enough for the general audience that orbs, special powers, Man in Black can use them.
Yep.
Got it.
It's like the Infinity Stones in Marvel. A single orb is way too powerful for one person to have. And you get that in The Wizard of Glass, where one person has the pink orb, and she is the most powerful thing on that side of the universe. She has one orb. And in this movie, he opens the door, and he's got 13 orbs, all of them.
He's like, look at my amiibo collection.
And it was like... Yeah. But that was like, it was a quick and done. And, readers will get it, but...
It does explain his power and why he is so powerful in this movie, because in the first book of The Gunslinger, Walter O'Dimm is not this powerful. So his power has been amped up, and that's because in this cycle around the tower, Roland was collecting the Horn of Eld, which he didn't have last time, this time, now he's got all 13 orbs, which Walter didn't have last time.
Mm.
Nice. Did you get your gripes out, Dustin?
I got. You guys did a very good job of picking out the gripes. I think I have two, and I won't go on too long. The two I have is the whole battle of the loss. They lost the battle. The battle is lost. The pretty much the reshoot.
Say Jericho Hill.
Yes, and the Dark Tower fans will understand Jericho Hill. I still get chills, goosebumps. Reading that chapter, and I've read it three times, and I still
and the comic book is fantastic.
The comic book in 2007, Marvel did the comic book version of
the
Battle of Jericho Hill. Just simplified, is it's the last stand of the gunslingers, and the Crimson King's army is at their doorstep.
Is that the Man in Black?
No, the Man in Black is a
he's the big guy.
He's a servant of the Crimson King.
He's a servant of the Crimson King.
I did get that, and I just said it wrong.
Yeah, so. The Battle of Jericho Hill is probably the most iconic scene that I could think of when it comes to amazing action and emotion and passion. And the scene shows up, and him and his father are sitting in a foggy valley going, the battle is lost. Nope, the tower's still up. And it was very watered down, and I'm going to just give that a pass. That was my gripe, because
you needed that scene.
Well, the thing is, change all the story if you want. I don't care if you change the story and throw in some of the things, but don't change Roland's history. Roland's history is what makes him who he is.
So what was changed in his history?
Well, here's one major aspect. Roland accidentally kills his father. Mm. I'm not going to spoil. He accidentally kills his father, and that twists Roland's mind for the rest of the story. It gives him the guilt, but focus to kill the Man in Black, because the Man in Black kind of did a little tricky illusion thing, and Roland came in there as a kid and he killed his father as a kid accidentally. And now that is that weighs heavily
on. And that history is now different.
Now the history is, so I'm like, okay, that's my gripe. Don't mess up the history. You can mess up his quest.
That's
to get
fair.
To
I'm big on character history.
Uncle Ben.
Yeah. Still pissed.
So anyway, that's my one gripe. I'll look past that. I think the other gripe is, okay, Jackie Early Haley, okay? Mm-hmm. He plays
Great actor.
Yeah, amazing actor.
Didn't have much to do.
He didn't have much to do. Now, here's the thing is, that character Sayer is a very, very powerful vampire in the series.
Mm-hmm.
He actually is, I think he's slightly more powerful than, if you guys remember Salem's Lot, there's some vampires. There's a very powerful vampire. Sayer makes this guy look like...
Yeah, the Salem Lot vampire is a servant of Sayer's.
Yes. Sayer is the king of the vampires. And his battle with Roland is, he throws him out the window, and then he gets shot once and gets hit by the car, and the scene's done. Jack is done. That was...
He'll probably... I assume he would come back later.
There are other worlds than
these. There are other worlds than these. So that's my other gripe is... Listen, the what Sayer did in the book series was awesome. And what they did with Jack Early Haley, they could have done so much with this character. But they just kind of threw him as a, Well, I'll just be the guy that...
henchman.
I'll just be a henchman. Mm-hmm. And no one's going to understand the power that Sayer had.
I did not get any of that from this movie.
And let's be clear, the battle in the Dixie Pig, which is like the climax of the movie that you guys all loved,
mm-hmm.
like the book turns that up to 19.
Oh,
yeah. I see what you did. And, boy, if I never get tired of all the 19 references, boy.
Yes, yes. And
Troy's been sending me pictures.
Remember in
19.
Salem's Lot, remember the priest, Father Callahan?
Yeah.
Okay, Father Callahan turns out to be a pretty badass when it comes to the Battle of the Dixie Pig. I won't get into it. Scott, you're going to love it. But
if you ever get there.
If you ever get to book six.
Six into seven.
If you can turn Spotify off long enough to put that puppy on.
And his Nintendo Switch. And
all right, let's get away from the book. Let's get back to the movie. So what were your favorite moments? We talked about gripes. What about favorite moments?
I got one. One of my favorite moments was when the Man in Black is conversing with Roland through the orb, and they're showing it as if the Man in Black is following him through around here or constantly in his face. Just like that scene was shot so beautifully to me, because you could see him kind of fading, like he wasn't there but he was,
mm-hmm.
and just taunting, and they go back and forth between that and then seeing the Man in Black just holding the orb, talking to the orb, when you realize that's what he's doing. It was just, I thought that scene was awesome. It just really made me realize how fantastical this world is. I don't know, just that's where it really hit me, because we did have some things like what was the red monster in the woods that where Jake thought he was seeing his father?
Mm-hmm. Just a demon.
Another demon.
It's just an unnamed demon.
Spirit demon.
That was a scene where I felt like I was worried that people that didn't read the books were going to be kind of like checked out, because it was just weird and there wasn't a lot of explanation. Just
kind of
had
cool, man.
I thought it was cool too, but I was worried that other people would have been turned off by it.
I'm like, oh, because they hit the tower, so it caused this jarring in the universe and opened up the tear, so they could start to come through a little
right.
bit. I thought that was cool.
Oh, I loved it too.
And then Roland's like, oh shit, something did come through.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, the moment where with the orb was where it kind of solidified with me, and I'm like, okay, I'm invested in this world now after mm-hmm. seeing that, because the first couple instances it was introducing me to it, and I'm like, what's going on? By that point, I was like, all right, I'm on board. So I think that was like the scene where I was 100% in with this movie. What about you guys?
My one of my favorite moments in the movie is, it's real small, but where Idris Elba is, Roland is.
I know what you're going to say.
Maybe. It's right at the very, it's near the end, where he just looks at Jake and he smiles. It's literally, that's all it was. I just thought, I mean, because he plays the movie so stoic and badass the entire time. And you're wondering, I mean, I feel like you need that moment of
levity.
Levity, yeah. You need that moment of levity to kind of, just to show me he's got heart too. He's got depth. And that little smile, I mean, he just, man. I threw my panties at him.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly.
Because Roland
was so well done.
Roland is supposed to play a tortured hero. He is tortured for thousands of years. And when Aaron says, when he smiles, that actually gives that torture, you know.
It shows there's hope.
There's
for
hope.
Him.
Exactly.
Yep. That's exactly what I got. Because I'm like, man, he's got to do something, because I love this character. I love how he's playing him. But I need something to show me he's more than just Clint Eastwood. Like, he's got mm-hmm. just a little something more. And that's all he had to do. And I'm like, man, all right, I'm with you, though. Whatever you do after this, I'm with you. I'm with this character.
That's not what I thought you were going to say. I thought you were going to say when the first time he reloaded his six shooter.
Oh, I love the reloading shots, man. Seriously, give me a Western with that shit, and I am all over
The one where he just, like, spun the chamber and then just very quickly dropped in six bullets, like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and then just, like...
And you know the best part about that? Because Idris Elba is that cool as a person, I'm like, I think he's actually doing this.
Well, I'll be quick with this. In the first book, Idris Elba takes on an entire
Idris
town.
Elba's in the book?
No. Well, Roland. I'm going to...
They rewrote it that much? Yeah.
So, Roland takes on an entire town of 150-some people, and he kills every single one.
The whole town.
The whole town. And
dead.
King in the book describes Roland is reloading his guns as if he was just breathing. He does it by instincts, and his hands take on a life of its own. And that's it. And he's reloading, and he's shooting, and he's reloading. But I, as a reader, I'm going, King, Tell me how he's doing it. If he's such a badass, tell me how he's reloading it. You're not telling me how he's doing it. He's just doing it. And so I'm going, before the trailer comes out, man, I hope they do something to show how fast Roland can reload 6 shooters with one hand. That doesn't make sense.
They did 2 in the trailer, I remember specifically.
In the trailer, they were like, brrr, and when he showed a couple of the plays, because Roland does basically what they call, bullet play. He hypnotizes people with a single bullet.
Mm-hmm.
Rolling through his fingers, he hypnotizes people. And that's how bullets to him are.
I was hypnotized.
Yeah. Well, anyway, the trailer and the movie did it exactly. And now I want to read this book again one more time because now everything makes sense. It puts it together. That's how he takes on an entire town.
Right. Mm-hmm. He hypnotizes them.
My other favorite moment was killing Mom. I know it sounds horrible, but I never expected Mom to actually die.
Mm-hmm.
I figured because he kept her around, I'm like, well, so she's going to be bait. That's what we're going to do. And then you get back and she's
Ash.
You see ashes, and I'm like, this is a trick. It's a movie thing where I'm just like, okay, well, first he's not going to kill her. Then she's going to be bait. She's not actually dead. She'll show up at the end. It's all going to be happy. And then you find out, oh, no, yeah, she's dead. Ballsy. Holy crap, that's ballsy because for a movie, I expected closure. I expect him to say goodbye. All of these expectations I have from movies, and none of them were met. And I really enjoyed that. I thought that was a cool twist to what I expected.
Favorite moment for me was when they get to the town outside of what we assume as the book readers might be the outskirts of the town called Ludd, which happens in the third book. And
is it called Rivercross? I'm trying to remember.
It might be River Station.
Yeah.
You guys read the book, right?
It's been a while.
Just kidding.
But they get there and the town, we'll call it the mayor, prospect of the town, whatever, the head honcho, like meets everybody outside and they're having dinner. And then Roland says, we need to go do this and we need to do it now. And the mayor turns and says, we have to respect the law of the gunslinger. What the gunslinger says, we have to do. And I think that was really cool because we haven't heard that yet at all in any of the flashbacks with Stephen Deschain or any of the conversations he's had with Tom Taylor.
Roland Deschain or who's Stephen Deschain?
When we saw the flashbacks with Stephen Deschain.
Okay, that's that.
The gunslinger is like the law of Midworld. And so when you get that moment, you understand, oh crap, the gunslinger really means something to people.
Yeah.
Like that is a moment, and then you get that whole point of where the seer is saying, well, you're not a gunslinger. That really hits home because that's where you get the connecting tissue of the movie to go. There's the heart of the movie because Tom Taylor.
Jake says,
he has
a book, right?
Yeah. he says...
They rewrote this book with all the actual actors in the character's roles. Yeah.
But in that moment, he says, no, he is a gunslinger. I've seen it. Like, he is a gunslinger. He goes to bat for him. And that was just a very connecting moment for me.
Nice.
So, my favorite... I have 2 favorite parts. And,
well, that you already went.
No, I didn't. I talked about the bad stuff. The good stuff... I mean, the action scene's awesome.
Great. There's a ton of good stuff that we can't bore you with because...
Yeah, but here's the thing is...
Book reader stuff.
The one thing that really attracted me to the entire storyline of the Dark Tower is the relationships that are bonded between his quartet. And right now, his quartet's just very small. Hopefully, it gets bigger. But the bond that is growing between each of these people as it throws in. So, in the movie, there is a part where Roland sees Jake's pain of his mother getting killed. And he says, you need to fight it and you need to use your pain to come through. And it's a very minimal part. And I really wish that Jake was so younger in this movie. Roland picks him up and hugs him. And
lifts him up. That's great.
And carries him across the threshold and out of the house. And there are moments like this in the book that just makes you realize Roland, he does not have any offspring. Jake doesn't have a parent. And they feel that this is what makes both of them complete. And Roland becomes a father figure. And Jake becomes a son that Roland wants to grow. And become a gunslinger himself. And he holds him. And that was a really good part. Now, Tom Taylor was pretty tall. So when he held him up, his feet was probably like an inch off the ground. Carried him. But it was the moment that I thought was very meaningful to me. And the other part is where he sees him in the warehouse. And Jake is still fighting his pain. And Roland says, you know, I'm going to tell you the gunslinger creed, and this is what calms the heart. And he has Jake point the gun, and he does it. Now, there's a scene in the
third... I like that. It's much better than a montage.
The third book, he does that with Susanna, and he does that with Eddie. And they both have their own demons to fight inside, internally. And Roland simplifies it to just, we're going to come out with our gun, and I'm going to train you as a gunslinger, and we're going to recite this creed until it's embedded into your soul. And they say it constantly as they're firing the guns, and they fight their demons this way. And this scene right here was, it's small, but it was meaningful to me because I know that that's what Roland had done to keep his quartet together and to fight off what is internalizing, and he simplifies the internal fights just by saying, talk about the creed, and we're going to shoot bullets.
I really dig that. I mean, it's long. It feels like a really long creed. It's almost like a mission statement.
Yeah. But it's like the first time you can say, yeah, and you forget the face of your father. And you forget the face of your father's part by the third time.
Yeah.
Like, we get it. We understand.
Yes.
Thank God.
It's good, though.
Those were my two parts. And it was just about the bond. And I needed to see the bond between Jake and Roland. And that's what I was craving for in this movie.
All right, now final question, then we're going to get to Dustin's premiere experience. Scott.
Oh, we got to talk about the Easter eggs, though, too, for the...
We'll get there. Hold
oh,
on.
Oh, Troy got to do the Easter eggs.
Hang on. So, Scott, as a casual viewer, is there anything you wish they would have done different or you would like to have seen in this movie? I don't want to hear about the books. I want to hear about the movie.
No, I mean, I feel like I said my piece about what I didn't like about it. I would have liked to have some shots a little bit done differently. But give me more. That's really what I want, honestly.
Do you want another movie?
I really do. I'm really interested to read that first book and see if I can get through the first half of it, because I know you said it was a little dull. But I am intrigued. Hearing these two gush about it, seriously, leaving the theater, coming over here, he would not shut up.
Who's he?
Dustin would not shut up about this movie. Like I'm supposed to be giving him directions on the GPS to get over here, and I had to like, dude, we gotta turn left up here. Okay,
hold
go
on,
ahead.
Let me tell you about this point first before you tell me the directions to get here.
He was just mile a minute the whole way over here. When I see somebody else that excited about something, it makes me want to try to experience it and get that same sense of elation. Mm-hmm. I didn't grow up. I'm not going to have the opportunity to grow up with it like he did. I'm not going to have the opportunity to listen to it at 2x speed like Troy did. But I'm really intrigued to do it.
It's a long-ass book, man.
Yeah. Well, you see the first one's only like 300-400 pages, right?
Yeah, the first book.
He means it's a series.
It's a series.
Yeah.
That's 133 hours of audio.
Yeah.
That's a long time. That's more than Game of Thrones.
I think I would have liked more screen time with Roland, honestly. I feel like it took a little longer to get to him than I would have liked.
The comedic parts in New York I thought were good, but I also think it could have gotten a little bit old really fast.
Yeah.
So I think the ones that they did,
I'm glad they didn't do that. It was good. Because I don't need Crocodile Dundee.
Yeah, the hospital scene was good.
The hospital scene was perfect.
Fish out of water, haha, I get it. Let's get back to the serious nature.
What do you call this? Sugar. Yeah. The conveniently fully covered Coke can that was never like fully.
Yeah, and then you saw the Coke can later.
Yeah, and what's funny is that Coke
that's
can...
That's an Easter egg.
You can't talk about it yet. Okay. Damn it.
Just hold tight a minute. Yeah. So that's really all I really... I want more Idris, and I would have liked to have... I know in the book is a very adult book. I would have liked to have seen McConaughey be able to be an R-rated Man in Black. I think an R-rated Man in Black would have been a lot, even more.
I think it was more creepy when he was like walking around and saying, "Hey, little girls, you're going to be naughty now."
It's like, I see that you're a lawbreaker here.
I get older, they stay the same age.
We had to do it. All right, Troy, is there anything that you would have liked to have seen that you didn't or...
There's tons of stuff where it's like I wish there would have been a little bit longer explanations on some things, and there might have been another 15-20 minutes maybe to maybe set up something in the future. I like the way it ended. It's like the classic riding into the sunset kind of thing, and it does make me want to travel with these guys to wherever they're going next, which
riding
is really
into
good.
Portal.
Right up to the portal. But the very end of the movie, they go into this warehouse, into their portal that they now control, and there's a picture of a rose on the front of the garage door, or storefront, or whatever you want to call it. And the rose is actually a very critical element. You actually see it in the opening credits of the movie when they talk about that the movie was, you know, made by the Kotet Corporation, and there's a rose on the Kotet by the turtle, and the turtle's a big thing in Stephen King lore. So I just wish it would have been more rose.
Did you see the building they got into? What was the building was labeled? King's Jewelry.
King's Jewelry, yeah.
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 Ba-dum-bum-ba-dum-bum. Psh. What about you, Dustin?
Here's the thing is, the one big thing that makes all the Dark Tower readers very, very giddy, going crazy for, is what he's got in his gunny, or what he's got in his backpack. And that is the Horn of Eld. They didn't touch anything. They didn't explain why the horn is Eld on there.
Because they didn't explain the battle.
They didn't explain the Battle of Jericho Hill. They didn't explain anything else or whatever. But that horn is...
important.
Is so important to why Roland is doing this again. And they didn't do it. And they didn't... No one's going to know. Like, the non-readers won't know what that Horn of Eld is all about. So...
Can you tell us, or... You don't want to ruin the experience.
Let's just say that when the battle happened last time, the horn was dropped, and Roland didn't pick it up. And so he just keeps going over in his mind when he gets to the end of the...
If he would have picked it up, the battle, we'd be done by now?
No, if... Well...
We don't know.
We don't know.
Okay.
It's just that the horn now... Him carrying the horn, and I don't want to ruin it for Scott... Him carrying the horn now.
There's thousands of people that don't care what Scott thinks.
Yeah, but here's the thing is I want to respect... There might be other listeners that you all have right, that will right. want to start reading the book, and we don't want to ruin it. That horn is the reason why he has it now compared to why he doesn't have it earlier is going to be crazy for the readers. And it's so meaningful. I won't get into it.
But you wish you would have been here.
But I really wish they would have just at least mentioned why he's got the Horn of Eld on his backpack.
Or at least said, hey, there's the Horn of Eld in my backpack. So people knew exactly what it was.
Yeah, yeah. And then people could go like, well, what is it? Let me Google it.
Well, you knew what it was, right?
We knew what it was.
But right. like,
maybe, well, I figure if they're not going to do anything with it, why would they mention it this movie?
At least they could just say, well, what's that in your back? Oh, that's a Horn of Eld. And then that's all he could have said, and that we would have been fine with it.
Because then when the seer says, well, he is Roland of Gilead, of the mm-hmm. line of Eld, then you'd be like, oh, wait,
hold on a second.
And that horn thing came back, and then you'd be like all digging into the internet about
it. People would have, you could have Googled Horn of Eld, and you would have found out how important this thing is. But because it didn't...
You probably would have gotten 133 hours of audio about the Horn of Eld itself from all the constant readers.
Yeah.
All right, let's do Easter eggs before we find out about the experience. So what were the Easter eggs other than the penny? I think Pennywise was pretty obvious. 1408 was pretty obvious.
1919 for the code for the portal.
Yeah, well, let's talk about like Scott and Aaron, what they've noticed out of the
Easter eggs.
I think we just rattled them off. That was it.
That was it?
I'll be honest. I knew there were a ton of Easter eggs in this. I wasn't looking for them. I was watching the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really... Well, I have a kind of a... personal thing where if I'm watching a movie, I don't look for that stuff. If it pops out, great. If it doesn't, I'll catch it on the next run. So, you know, after I've seen the movie, but I like to actually focus on
the movie. So nobody saw Cujo walk down the street?
No.
No.
I didn't even see the Saint Bernard.
I know what a Saint Bernard is. I don't remember that.
Yeah, the lady's walking the Saint Bernard.
Jake walks outside and he looks across the street and there's a Saint Bernard walking across the street and it's Cujo. Huh. And the scene that you loved about the man in black kind of phasing in and out.
Yeah.
There's a part where Roland gets to a dead end and he pushes on a picture to turn around. The picture he's pushing is on
Raquel
from Shawshank Redemption.
Mm. So Raquel Welch?
Yeah, Raquel Welch.
Oh, really?
Yes.
When they're sitting up in the room.
Throw a rock through?
Don't know. It was still taped down, though, from what I understood.
But just on the top.
Obviously. He must have crawled in a hole and taped it from the inside.
There was the... then he and his best friend are sitting in the room, and he's sitting on the floor, and he's rolling the car. The car is Christine.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Which is also technically Mercedes, in a way.
And at the very beginning, there are two twin girls playing patty cake with each other, and they're both saying, come play with us, come play with us. The Shining. Twin girls from The Shining. are in there. There's a spot in there where it's on the wall. It says, you know, hello there with a big smiley face. That's actually from one of Stephen King's newer books, Mr. Mercedes.
Mm-hmm. Trilogy.
The trilogy, yeah.
Then there was also the very beginning. We talked about it. There's the turtle with the Kotech Corporation with the rose.
But that's not really an Easter egg. The turtle is big. Yes. Okay.
Spoiler alert.
And then you have obviously Pennywise the clown. And then you have
that one was the most blatant.
And then you have
huge letters.
It's almost like dumbasses. There are Easter eggs in this movie.
There's Blaine the train. There's a spot in there which is represents Blaine the train.
Right, near the Pennywise scene.
Yeah, right behind the balloons.
It's right behind the balloons, and it's kind of an Easter egg for the readers,
for the book readers.
Yeah.
And then there was the Overlook Hotel is in the picture on the shrink's desk during the earthquake from The Shining.
I saw that one.
Is actually sitting next to a statue blowing a horn, which is actually important because that resembles the Horn of Eld.
Now, there's one other thing that I think...
So they are aware it's in there.
Yeah. So there's a thing that Troy and I got a little giddy on, and that's the hospital scene. Yeah. It's the hospital scene, and there's a commercial of two raccoons talking.
Yes. It's a recent commercial, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
Roland says, the animals still talk in your world?
He's like, no.
Yeah, what does that mean?
Wait, still? Okay, the whole Kotech, remember that we always talked about Eddie and Susanna as the big, big characters. There's one more big character that sticks with Roland all the way to the end.
Rocket Raccoon.
It is a Rocket Raccoon.
It's a raccoon. Well, kind of a hybrid raccoon dog thing named Oi. And Oi has a basic language, like he can kind of talk, but
like he used to be able to talk, but now he lost it.
He's able to kind of repeat what you say and then hold on to it, and then use that as his language to talk back to you.
He's a parrot.
He's like a parrot, but he actually becomes Jake's second sight. And Jake uses his shine to communicate with Oi, and Oi becomes pretty much his weapon.
Mm-hmm. And to see through Oi's eyes in a few places.
Yeah. And so Oi is also a major character. And I didn't know, I'm like, they have $60 million to play with. They're not going to put Oi in this. But when we see the commercial, those two raccoons talking, and then Roland says that really quick thing, I'm nudging Troy. I'm like, that's Oi. So we got a little excited on that.
The soda can, the sugar scene, is actually, it is a Coke can. And the reason why he hides the Coke can label is because in the stand, they drink Nozzola Cola, which looks like a Coke can. So it was technically the throwback. It's the shout out to say that he's drinking Nozzola, not actually Coke.
So in a lot of the books, the parallel worlds are so similar to what we're living in today. There's minor little changes, like Takura Spirit instead of Nissan is the one thing that's changed. Or Nozzola Cola, which is different. You know, it looks exactly like a Coca-Cola. The red can and the cursive writing, but it's Nozzola. So there's like minor little things that can make you think, wait a minute, I'm not in this world. I'm in the world of the stand or something else. So that was a little callback.
Like Earth 1 and Earth 2 and Earth 3.
Was there anything from like Carrie or... I'm trying to think of what other ones.
They said there was something from Carrie, but I didn't catch it.
No.
And they said the Misery book was in there. I didn't quite catch the Misery book either. Pig.
There's a connection.
No, and actually, I was looking for the scene of the Misery, which they had a screenshot online, but they never had it in the movie. So I'm guessing
ankles laying around.
There's a couple of there's probably a couple missing scenes in here. I mean, there's one where, the man in black goes, "Come on!" and he screams at him. That's not in the movie.
Right. That always happens in the trailer.
Yeah.
So there's
a lot of things in the trailer that didn't show up in the movie, which is fine, but. So I don't know. I'm sure
there's a lot of them. So if you're a constant reader, you will love it. Yeah. You'll pick up on a ton.
That's not the case, is what I'm understanding. Some readers just aren't digging it. So I mean, it's definitely split. You know, there's
no, I mean, you'll love the Easter eggs.
Oh, yeah.
The Easter eggs are what will make you happy.
So let's go around and real quick, and then we're going to go to Dustin's party. So, Scott, final thoughts? Anything you want to add?
Give me more. That's all I'm going to say. And I'm totally intrigued to read the books. I'm not going to guarantee I'm going to do it, but I'm very intrigued. Just hearing the little things you guys are talking about, like I want to see what everybody, what all the fuss is about. So
not to mention when Stephen King shows up in the book, that's awesome.
Mind-blowing.
That's just
mind-blowing.
Breaking the fourth wall.
That's just weird. I don't know what wall that is if it's a book, but it's a lot of walls. I really enjoyed it. I want another one. If it's a TV series, so be it, but that means Idris Elba probably won't be part of it, and I want Idris Elba.
Idris has agreed to be in the television series.
I don't know how that feels, but as long as he's in it, I'll watch it. I don't want to watch a different person play Roland.
Well, no, there will be a younger version. It'll start off with Roland talking.
Yeah, that's
about
what
a story.
I'm worried about, and I don't want that. I want more Idris Elba. Mm-hmm. So
you'll get it. You'll get it.
No, that's cool. You can have your series. I would rather have more movies with Idris Elba. That's what I'm saying. It's what I want. So what do you want, Troy?
I was just. Please do not suck. It did not suck. I'm good.
Okay.
I'm excited. Dustin? I want more.
Yeah, I would probably reflect exactly what Troy said, was the fact that, you know, I was nervous about the movie, and when it came out, I enjoyed it, but I thought maybe I had my fanboy goggles on. I wanted this to have more legs, so listening to other people say, I enjoy it, I want to see more, makes me happy. And now I enjoy the movie much more.
It's a pretty good movie.
It is. It is a pretty good
movie.
It's
well constructed.
Now let's talk.
Music is good too in it. The score was
actually
really
very
good.
Yeah, I thought the score was very good too. And some people were harping on the effects. I had zero problems.
There were a couple in like the final fight scene where it was more like
Blade.
Clone Wars.
It was almost like a Blade shot where it looked like
the flying around was a little bit too like.
That's the only problem I had the entire movie. Though.
The whole vampire scene thrown out into the bus and they're magically stand up in the bus and live was a little bit hokey, but for the most part, it was pretty good.
Nothing that bothered me. No. Nothing that bothered me. So let me, okay, now we're going to go to the premiere. We're going to talk about the premiere, and I'm going to, because I know Dustin would tell this story a little longer than I will, so I'll make it quick in terms to get to the premiere. So Dustin is an artist, and IGN had a contest, IGN.com. Please go there, check them out. And they didn't sponsor this podcast, though, but we'll take your check. Send it. Dustin Baker is an artist, as you know, because he did the logo for The Hollywood Outsider. He's done numerous other works. But he entered this contest for IGN, and he drew a picture of Idris Elba as Roland, and it won this contest. It won an all-expenses-paid trip to the New York premiere, which is, round of applause to Dustin. Yeah. That's a huge deal, man. So tell us about your experience with going to the premiere.
Yeah, the experience, and first of all, I will also do a shout-out to IGN. They did... the contest was great. I know that there was a lot of entries, and every single person that entered into this deserved to come here as well. I just felt honored that I was one that got picked. And the promotional group, Creative Zing, they took care of me big time. So, I'll do a little shout out to Tracy if she's listening, but she did a great job making sure that everything was taken care of. So, I'm gonna shout out to the IGN and Creative Zing for doing what they do. So if you guys see a contest and it's promoted by Creative Zing, it's real and they will take care of you. So, the premiere, I was able to pick a guest. Obviously, I picked my wife. She did read the all seven books. She wasn't a big fan, but she understood the
lore. She wasn't a big fan, but read all seven books?
Yeah, she read all
That's
seven.
That's dedication.
Well, the fact is,
I
is that...
I stopped it. Half
the
of
fact
one.
Is, the fact is that I kept on talking about it, and she's like, God, fine, I'll just read the book so you can stop talking to me about it. And that's probably why she read it. But anyway, we were flown out, we got to stay in Midtown Hilton, and right across the street was the premiere. So, I got to the premiere. It was filled outside of the theater, or it was actually the Museum of Modern Art. Outside was a lot of, rabid fans waiting for the celebrities to show up, and there were security everywhere, making sure that no one was going to walk into this place unless they had a ticket. I get to the will call. They pull out my tickets, and I'm going to laminate these things because they are, you know, they're really nice tickets. I walk up to the security guys. They say they look at my tickets, and they walk me right through, and we walk down that Well, it was a black carpet, not the red carpet, but it was a black carpet. And so I felt like a celebrity for about, you know, 10 seconds. It was amazing. And then that's when some of the celebrities started showing up with their cars outside, and they were walking through. So Tom Taylor showed up. Catherine Winnick was there. Some of the screenwriters had shown up. Nikolai Arcel was there. And I was actually looking for Jackie Earle Haley, but he wasn't there. I was looking for Stephen King. He didn't show up. But, you know, we got Matthew McConaughey and Idris Elba, and you could tell that they bonded great outside of the movie. And they, you could say they had a pretty good chemistry between each other. And they were, you know, getting stuck with all the interviews. So I didn't really have a chance to actually, you know, come up and say hi. But I, you know, I was within feet of them. And I, you know, I took a nice picture, and I had a great time watching their interactions with what they did. And then the security then pushed everybody into the movie theater because it was about time to start. So as I sat down, the theater, it wasn't a big theater, but every single person that walked in were all giving each other hugs, shaking hands, high fives. The excitement of the theater was palpable. Every single person in here was either a cast, crew, family, or someone who was directly involved in getting this movie out into the theaters. Most of these people here had not really seen this movie out onto the big screen. So when they started off with, you know, Sony Entertainment, I heard a group of people to the left go screaming because that was their company. And then we got Columbia Pictures. They were screaming. And then we got, you know, a couple other studios that were showing up, and every single thing, people were going nuts. And then, you know, when it got to, you know, a specific star that showed up on the show, or, you know, there were some screams, and then when Idris Elba was reloading his guns and he was shooting left and right, people were just high-fiving each other, and it was an amazing experience. I don't think I'll ever be able to go into a theater like that again, unless I get involved into another red carpet mirror. IGN, if you want to pass over some more.
You're sitting here with your art book and your sketchbook. Yeah. You're like, oh, let me draw that.
Yeah. I had an unforgettable experience, and I wanted to honor every single wish that I was supposed to follow through. You know, no pictures. There was obviously a lot of...
Yeah, you took it very seriously.
Which you should. I did.
Obviously, kids.
I was not able to talk about, you know, that I was even a grand prize winner until later on. They needed to make sure everything was smoothed out, and they had liabilities and all this. And even sitting in the theater, there were people, there was security left and right that had night vision goggles that were scanning the audience to making sure no one was recording anything.
Wow.
So it was pretty tight-lipped stuff.
It's sad that we live in a world where that has to happen.
Yeah. And I'm sure it's going to be more and more prominent. But this, I would say that out of like all the red carpet premieres, this probably was a smaller red carpet premiere. But I think because it was smaller, it felt more personal to everybody that was involved. It was more personal. So as I watched this movie, I had to shut down the whole fanboy Dark Tower to enjoy this experience of everybody putting all this work together to get this done and seeing it on the big screen. Everybody was just going crazy. And then credits roll. And every name that popped up the credit, people were clapping. People were standing up. Then, you know, like, as the credits started rolling up, you see after the cast, then you start seeing, like, you know, the best boy grip. And people were just, you know, it was just the small stuff. People were just enjoying it. And I just felt this movie was, even though, a lot of these people probably came out with several other movies, this movie was very special to them at the time. And I was really happy to be part of that experience. So, if I was rating my experience, I would have, out of $1 out of $10 at the movie, I would have given it $19 out of $10 because of that experience. So, it was something that unforgettable, something I won't ever forget. So, and the whole time I'm sitting there, it was all because I drew a picture of Idris Elba as the gunslinger
And you really wanted to give him that picture, too.
I did.
But you couldn't work that out.
Apparently. No.
Idris, if you're listening, get a hold of Aaron at thehollywoodoutsider.com, and I will get your publicist's address so Dustin can send you a copy.
That picture was very special because I drew that for my brothers who were overseas in the military. They were serving our country, and I drew this because we still were able to connect through the Dark Tower. And I drew that picture for them. And then when I saw the contest, I said, I need to put this picture into the contest and tell them why I'm a big fan. And I think that was meaningful. So I was thinking, well, if I can bring this picture to Idris Elba or Matthew McConaughey or Stephen King, have someone sign it, it would have been very special. But I also wanted to respect their time because they were getting pummeled with questions and fans and everybody else. And the last thing they need is somebody else to kind of shove a picture in their face saying, you need to sign this, you know? So
I think you would have been happy if they just took it, right?
If they took it
and put it on his wall.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was just happy to be in the presence of everybody there. So that was my experience. It was something that I won't ever forget.
That's really cool, man. Thanks so much for sharing. That's a really cool story.
And I'll say that,
You got him going again. It's your fault.
I waited for 20 years, over 20 years for this movie to come out. And, and then when in 2007, Stephen King finished the last book, or book 7. There are 8 books because he wrote kind of a side story.
And narrated it.
He finished the last book in 2004. And 3 years later, Marvel Comics came out with a comic book version of it. And then we heard word that J.J. Abrams and the guys from Lost were going to put the Dark Tower movie together. And all of us fans got crazy excited about it. And then 2 years later, we hear word from like J.J. Abrams and the rest of the guys that the reverence for their respect for this story is getting in the way of getting this completed. And they ended up dropping the whole thing because it was just, there was too much complications of everything in the way. And then in 2010, Universal Pictures announced that they were going to actually pick up the movie and Ron Howard was going to be at the helm. And people got excited again after our hearts were broken in 2009. And after Ron Howard picked it up, Ron was kind of talking with Stephen King, and I guess they said the only way they can do this is by making a trilogy and a TV series between each movie. So 2 seasons of TV and a trilogy for this complex of a story. So, and then in 2011, we heard that Javier Bardem was going to be playing Roland of Gilead. And it was between Javier Bardem and Viggo Mortensen. Javier Bardem got picked. Javier Bardem was saying, "I am honored to be being part of this character," and that was then that ended up getting dropped. And then I think so our hearts were broken again after that was all dropped. And then I think even HBO was going to pick up a TV series. And this is announced in 2011. HBO was going to say they were going to do a TV series based off the Dark Tower. And then that was dropped. And Ron Howard was actually excited for this whole thing. He said he wanted to stay true to this whole book series, and it just didn't work. And then 2012, Warner Brothers decided to take on the film. And Goldsman rewrote the whole script again. And Russell Crowe was picked to be Roland of Gilead. So the whole script was written for Russell Crowe in mind. And so that, and then that was that was canceled in development. And so, I mean, there was a Silicon Valley investor that wanted to put millions into this movie to make sure that it was going to be seen all the way to the end. And it just fell through and our hearts were broken again. So we suffered through so many times. And then, 2015, we hear that, Sony was wanted to pick this up. And this is the boy who cried wolf. Our hearts were broken too many times. I'm not going to believe it anymore. And Idris Elba got picked, and Matthew McConaughey got picked up. And then after that, that's when this movie really happened. So, Troy and I, and, I know Justin had talked about it too. We just got our hearts broken so many times that we just didn't want to believe it anymore. and then this happened, you know, today. So this is where it all culminated at.
All right.
And it was awesome.
It was awesome.
The end.
Okay, I think that does it. We're going to wrap this up. Remember, you can always subscribe to The Hollywood Outsider at thehollywoodoutsider.com, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and anywhere else you find podcasts. We are everywhere. Google Play. What else is there, Scott? Everything.
iHeartRadio.
iHeartRadio. We're on that one, too. Yeah, I think I said everything else.
Both here, and on the Keystone Earth, and in Midworld.
Oh, I can't do all that. All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Remember, the next time you go to the theater, to give Dark Tower another chance, if you haven't already, buy popcorn. Lots of it.
Buy cheddar popcorn.
Oh, that was really good.
And you clawing your way out of the darkness? Did you tell the kid whoever walks with you dies by my hand?
I will kill him for both of us.
I do not aim at my hand. His hand has forgotten the face of his father. I aim with my eye. I do not shoot with my hand. I shoot with my mind. I do not kill with my gun. I kill with my heart.